Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. This is Grad School Buddy, a show that gives simple answers to questions about grad school. I'm your host, Ebele Chukwumoye, a development economist and impact storyteller who has a master's from Georgetown University and a bachelor's from the University of Nigeria, Nsukka. We hope this show helps you make better grad school decisions. Let's dive right in. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Grad School Buddy. Today, I am with Diksha, who is my first guest from India. I'm saying first guest because I'm hoping you introduce me to your friends. As usual, I asked her for her bio, and unlike people like Layo, she didn't give me three lines. So I will read Diksha's bio, and then I will turn it over to her to introduce herself to us. Diksha is a consultant at the World Bank with the Human Capital Project Initiative. She joined the World Bank in 2021 and works primarily on analytics for human capital development, financing, and resilience. Before joining the bank, she worked on livelihood projects with the state government in India. She has also co-developed a systematic review on social protection and resilience with the International Initiative for Impact Evaluation. She has supported several critical research projects while completing her master's degree in public policy, most notably with the Georgetown University Institute for Women, Peace and Security. She holds an MPP degree from Georgetown University and a BA in economics from Madras University. Okay, so she's not expecting this question because she did this thing where she went and overprepared. So my first question for you is, you've given us so much about like what you do at work, but I know that outside this bio that you gave us, Diksha is, she has 1 million personalities. And I'd like to hear about that. Like, tell our audience, our guests about it.
Hey, Abeli. So nice to be on the podcast. Well, it's really hard to speak about oneself. But if I had to, I would characterize myself as someone open to new experiences, be it personally, professionally, socially, mentally. I really enjoy learning from different people and from different places. And I think it keeps life exciting. I'm someone that really loves spending time with my family. I have a brother. My parents are lovely. And I secretly like my grandparents more. My parents don't know that, but you can tell. I think they already know, but I love my grandparents a lot. And I have two dogs back home in India and can't wait to see them next. So I'm really a family person. I love my friends also. And I love you. So I would say, in summary, this is, a little bit about myself.
Okay, thank you, Diksha. First of all, I want to ask you two questions that are not even important right now. But you said you have dogs and I never realized you have dogs. So do you want to tell us their names? And also, I love you too. You're like one of my best bros from the Makat community, in case all the other bros hear this.
So I have my two dogs. Their names are Leah and Miller. I named Leah and my brother named his dog Miller. And I think he was in this phase where he was really interested to get into the army. He would watch like a million different stories on soldiers, on World War I and II. And then he just decided to name one of his dogs after a soldier. That's the backstory. I just woke up and I was like, you know what? Leah sounds cute. I'm just going to call my dog Leah.
Okay, that's really, really interesting. And I'm glad I asked that question because I didn't even know there was a backstory to the names that you gave the dogs. I can't wait to meet them. When will you invite me to India?
Come with me next time I go.
When are you going?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because in December, like the tickets, it's probably the diesel prices, they're really high. And it's just crazy this time around the year. Maybe next year. Let's go together.
Okay. You guys heard that, so I'll follow up. And so one thing I'm really curious about is, before you came to the US, before you took that flight and decided you wanted to come to the Makat School, what were you doing? What were your interests? What was your life like? What was the day in the life of Diksha?
That's a very interesting question. It's actually nostalgic also to think about a time before 2019, because I feel like we've lived so many different lifetimes through the pandemic. And even 2019, thinking about my first day in grad school seems like ages ago. Abele is thinking about her first day. But my life in India was definitely very different from what it is now. I was in this phase where I was taking chances. I had just left my job being a journalist and took a leap of faith and decided I want to work with a development institute and to pursue my interest in development economics. That worked out. And I had a lot of other avenues that I was taking chances. Some I failed, some I didn't, but it was a learning experience. For me, it was an experience where I was just putting myself out there. And I was also investing in new relationships and you know, so many different people that I had to meet. It was a nice life. I moved back home to with my parents. I was living in Delhi before, and it was definitely I was very fortunate to move back home with my parents. It was definitely comfortable, but it also allowed me to experiment. And I'm glad, looking back at that time, I'm glad I had that room and that ability to experiment. So when I decided to come to grad school, I knew at that point of time that I was sure.
I definitely agree. I think it's a privilege to be able to move back home. I myself did not move back with my parents, but I moved in with my sister, and I was a thorn in her flesh because I refused to leave until I was sure that I was ready to leave. So it's really exciting to hear about that. And also to hear about, you know, your stints with journalism. Like, do you want to share more about that with us? Like, at the time where you said you were kind of thinking and discovering yourself, you said it involved some failures and it involved some, you know, self-discovery. How could you, because I know that's a very tricky time. That's like just after you finished your bachelor's, I'm assuming. What was that period like emotionally for you?
You know, that's a great question as well. And I still remember when I moved back from Delhi to Chennai, which is my hometown, I didn't have anything to do for 6 months. I was at home. I was coming to terms with this change of my job, and I was taking a chance because my parents and, you know, a few of my friends didn't know this field of public policy, and they didn't know what it meant. They didn't know what I was trying to get into. So it was definitely hard to focus on just the one goal and to go forward with it, knowing that, you know, your parents and your friends around you are not really, they don't know what it is. So it was uncharted territory. But along the way, I feel like I met people, I connected with people that were in the field, and that really helped me because I was able to slowly and bit by bit learn what this industry looked like in India, what kind of people were working in this industry, where they were working, what schools they went to, how did they craft their journey. And that helped me a lot because it instilled a sense of clarity, at least, you know, a short-term clarity, like, yes, okay, whatever I'm doing, it's gonna lead to something. And I think that kept me going. And of course, my parents' support. And they trusted. They didn't know what it was, but they trusted me and they trusted the process.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Diksha. And I can see, I'm not trying to agree with everything you say. I'm hoping to disagree with you soon. But I also agree that, you know, this was also really uncharted territory for my family. And I know that they gave me all the support they could in every form. So it's really nice that you had that support to bring you this far. Okay, so my next question involves leaving India. When you decided, okay, yes, like you had connected with all these wonderful people, you had seen these people in India who were doing things that were a little bit similar to what you wanted to do, and you had identified the schools that they went to. I'm very curious about what the grad school application process is for an Indian, especially like in terms of access to support groups or access to scholarships, access to funding. How did you find these groups, if there were any, and how were you able to kind of like leverage them?
Thanks for that question. It's actually very interesting to share my experience because I definitely had a lot of support when I was applying to grad school. In fact, I remember this one conversation I had with someone who was helping me review my essays and editing them. He told me that, you know, once I got into, you know, a couple of grad schools, I called him and thanked him. And he said, you know, the only thing that, you know, he wanted me to remember was just pave it forward. When I went to him, he was so willing to give me this help and support. And then he told me that just keep doing it to people that come to you. Because collectively, as a community, as you know, as a country, we kind of help the people that come after us to go forward and to go and establish you know, themselves in wherever, whichever field, whichever country. And that's what keeps us going. And I really, even till today, I keep that in mind. And whoever comes to kind of, you know, speak to me from any field, from any part of the world, I'm always willing to help. And if I don't have the answers, I try to connect them with someone who does. And that's the kind of community and support group that I received in India. Speaking about the application process, it's quite standard compared to, you know, all of the other countries, and especially students that are applying to the US. It starts with preparing for the GRE, and then the IELTS or the TOEFL, whichever you know, each individual wants to take. And it's also connecting with a lot of people that have gone to certain schools in the US, in your field, and speaking to them about what they found interesting in their school, what subjects they took, what professors they received mentorship from, and how the job opportunities are. And I think a lot of our school selection is based on definitely the resources, the kind of subjects, and even the branding of the school, but also how close it is to opportunities. And, you know, whether the program is a STEM certified program. And that's something really important to us international students, because we do want that return on investment. We do want to get a job to kind of convert all our academic knowledge into practical experience. Of course, there are candidates that wish to come back to their home countries. But for those who wish to gain that practical experience, I think knowing how close your university is to opportunities, or how easily did they convert to opportunities, is important. And so that was something that we also kind of, you know, gathered information on. And then we make a selection of all the schools that we want to apply to. And then comes the SOPs. And, you know, they can be a very, they can be a very interesting process, because while you're writing the SOP, you also ask yourself questions. You ask yourself why you want to do this, and what would this lead to? And I think that's a very crucial part of this process that got me thinking about what it is I want. And I think I came out of that experience with clarity, with knowing that, wait, you know, I'm not just going to go to grad school. I'm going to have these goals. I'm going to have these, you know, these check boxes that I'm going to ensure that I, you know, get this experience. I take these classes, and it kind of links to what I want to do later on. So I think that was a very interesting part of the process. And once your applications are gone, I think it's waiting to hear confirmations. And then there's a whole other process when it comes to getting your visa and getting your accommodation, which I would say are definitely challenging. They're hurdles in the whole process.
Thank you so much. That was really, really detailed and very, very helpful. I took notes because there were questions that I really wanted to ask you. And so the first thing that I know that you said that really, really piqued my interest, and I believe a lot of people might be curious about, is when you talked about the closeness of the schools you choose to opportunities. So how do you define these opportunities? And in your case, like, what was that for you? You could use yourself as an example, mm-hmm. if you feel comfortable.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, this is definitely a personal thought process, or the way I look at things. I'm sure it's different for different folks, even probably you. But the reason why converting my grad school into an opportunity was so important to me, because I knew that I wanted that practical experience living in the US. And I looked at all the other schools. They had their, you know, merits, of course. But the reason why I chose Georgetown was because it was situated in DC. It had the World Bank. It had, you know, so many nonprofits, so many other consultancies, private organizations. And I believed that it would be so much more easier to convert my time at Georgetown into a job, or even kind of get an internship. And I knew that there were professors, and I'd already previously spoken to them via, you know, emails. And I knew that they had work going on in different organizations. So the linkage would be there, where a professor works with an organization, or they knew someone who would, or maybe during the summer there was opportunity to kind of intern with an organization and then convert that. So for me, that was important. It also meant a return on investment, and it just felt like a practical solution. And Georgetown is a good university. It's not
You know, it's really good. It's not, it's known for a lot of its programs, and I, and the professors are really good. The students, some of them that I had spoken to previously, spoke really highly of it. So it didn't seem like a bad choice, and everything kind of fit together in terms of having financial aid, in terms of opportunities, in terms of the people, professors, and, you know, that's how I made my decision. And which is why I feel that being able to convert your time at grad school into an opportunity was so vital for me personally.
Okay, thank you again. Like, that was a very thoughtful response to begin with, and it was really, really detailed, which is what I really love. One thing I really noticed is that you took your time to do your assignment. Like, you did a whole lot of homework, you talked to a lot of people, and it helped you make or optimize the decisions that you eventually took. But I know that even within feeling like, okay, yeah, if you do A and B, C might happen, sometimes it wouldn't always work. And so I guess my next question is about the hurdles that you faced when you were going through this application process. And especially from your perspective as an Indian, are there hurdles that you faced, and are there things that you wish could be different for other people coming after you?
Sure. And, you know, everyone has different kind of hurdles. For me, I was definitely concerned about my financial aid, you know, and I'm happy that I secured a little bit from Georgetown, but, you know, there could have been scope for more. Definitely, we all want a full scholarship. But I would say that scholarships are plenty available in India. And, you know, not speaking for myself, I fully understand my privilege. I understand that, you know, I would be able to take a loan if I wanted to. But there are so many students who are so brilliant. And I've interacted with so many friends that always wanted to go to grad school, and, you know, those who have the merits but didn't have access to financial aid. And I would want to highlight that as definitely one of the hurdles. You know, they say that you have to be from a certain kind of like financial standing to be able to afford to come to the US. And that is true. We'd all be lying to ourselves if that, you know, if we say it wasn't. And I just, it's regrettable that there are so many people who are so smart, who can, you know, easily succeed at grad school. But the one thing stopping them is access to finance. I would say that's a hurdle to many. It was definitely a struggle for me as well, because I had applied to a couple of scholarships, and there are a few in India, but it would be nice to have much more. And, you know, not for people like me, but for the many people who would benefit from it. So not answering your question straight away, I'm acknowledging that while that's something that, you know, would have helped me, I know that there are many other people who could have benefited from it. And I would say, you know, the other thing was trying to find accommodation to, you know, figure out how to orient yourself when you go to the US. It's really hard to do that sitting in India. It's really hard to kind of identify the right neighborhoods, to identify the kind of people that you're living with. So it would have been easier if the university had accommodation, you know, probably like an in-campus or even outside the campus accommodation. That would make things easier for a lot of international students coming in, because it's really hard to understand the neighborhood, the context, how to live, where to live, how to commute. So I would say accommodation was definitely, you know, a small hurdle to jump as well.
Okay, so just to recap, Diksha shares with us that two hurdles she faced were the finance, which I know that you also said that you understand that you had some privilege that was very helpful, but you wish more people had access to finance that could help them get this degree. And I definitely agree with you. I also feel that especially for courses like ours, a lot of the programs that we design, the people who understand the lived experiences don't always get the chance to be in the classroom to learn the technical tools to help them solve those problems. One thing that you also talked about that I really, really liked, and I'd love for you to shed more light on if you don't mind, is the accommodation bit. So definitely finding accommodation here is very different from what it is in a lot of places. And so my question was, when you identified that was a hurdle, you know, how were you able to find the first place that you leave? Did you find it while you were in India, or were you already in the US before you found it?
Yeah, no, it's a funny story what happened, because I remember I was posting on all of these Facebook flat and flatmate groups, and I received little to no response. But there was one house, you know, a bunch of girls were living in that house, and it was really far away from Georgetown University. I interviewed with them. They wanted to kind of just see if, you know, the vibes checked. And I'm glad it did, because they told me that they'd be happy to, you know, kind of sign a lease with me. But then it struck me that that neighborhood was really far off. And, you know, after speaking to someone, you know, few steps back, I got the place. They asked me to sign the lease, but I was unsure. I wanted to kind of check with a few Georgetown second year students, and I ran the address through them, and they told me that it was far off and it was probably not a safe neighborhood for women. And so I needed to back out of the offer, and they understood. They perfectly understood. But that's what kind of alarmed me. I was thinking about, you know, living in India, how do I know what neighborhoods are safe? And, you know, I had to check with a few people to kind of get a sense of clarity about the neighborhoods. And, you know, a lot of the times you don't know. You just, you move, you figure it out, and maybe after the first semester you get another place. But I didn't want the hassle, because I knew once I start grad school, I had all of these plans, I had all of these courses set aside, and I wanted to completely focus in on it. So I took some more time. It was definitely last minute, but a friend of mine that also got into Georgetown, we kind of connected, and we thought of turning the tables around. So instead of looking for jobs are always on everyone's mind. Instead of looking for houses or spots in houses that needed roommates, we decided to just get a townhouse and then put up advertisements to get roommates. So it kind of makes things easier, because you secure a place. And we did. We found a townhouse in Georgetown, and then we put up advertisements for wanting two roommates. And there's no dearth of people looking for houses. So we were easily able to get two potential roommates that you know, ended up living with us. But, you know, that being said, it's definitely difficult. And like I mentioned before, it would have been so much more easier if the university had, like, on campus, outside campus accommodation, at least for international students, you know, or they would in some way help us. I know Georgetown had a little bit of a system, but it there could have been a little more hands-on approach to it.
Okay, and I know that I have asked you a million questions about accommodation, but I am really curious to know. So when you found the townhouse, how did you find it? Like, were you walking on the road one day and you saw a house and you're like, I'm going to buy that?
You know, it's just a lot of luck and being at the right place in the right time. But there is an app called Zillow. It's very useful, and, you know, highly recommend you know, folks that are listening to check out Zillow as well, because what happens is sometimes management companies put up properties that are not for sale, like just for rent, and you can find houses, you can closer to campus, you can find apartments, you know, two bedroom or three bedroom apartments, and they are more than willing to lease it out to students. In fact, I was really lucky, because my friend and I that found this house, the landlord did not ask us for a credit history, because they understood that we were students. They understood that we were international students. So they asked us different documentation, and they were satisfied with the credibility, and they, you know, kind of gave us a 1-year lease. And it turned out okay. Although I would highly recommend living in an apartment over a townhouse, because it comes with a lot of issues. You know, it comes with a lot of maintenance issues. Sometimes landlords can be really, really difficult in terms of negotiating, you know, an increase in the rent, or, you know, maybe he's paying utilities, or they just generally have very unreasonable demands. You know, I have experience with that. So I was glad that I moved to an apartment after my student years. But yeah, I would say Zillow is a good place to look. Flat and flatmates on Facebook can be tricky, but, you know, people have navigated it in the past. And look out for spots in apartments and townhouses. That can be ideal. But if not, you know, Zillow always has
houses and apartments for rent that you can find and then go and find roommates.
Okay, thank you so much for sharing, Diksha. And you talked about the fact that you had some house issues, like with regards to either like maintenance or, can I use the word uncertainty and like payment and stuff? Like, could you share with us what those issues were, especially for people who are just coming to the US for grad school so that they can know things to look out for or to watch out for?
No, absolutely. And, you know, it was a very difficult period because the kind of issues that I had with my landlord, I know you know about them. We've spoken about it, on different times. It can get tricky. And, you know, especially as an international student, it's very hard to understand how to navigate these situations. And, you know, it's interesting because I have two perspectives. I have a perspective where it happened the first time and I didn't know how to deal with it. And it just went very, very out of hand. But then I have another perspective where I was prepared and I dealt with it much better. And I would say well-seasoned. And it kind of solved on its own. So I won't get too much into the details, but essentially after the first year, there was a bit of a misunderstanding between my landlord and myself with respect to some of the furniture that she left behind in the house. And I think she was also a bit upset that I moved some of the furniture into the garage, which was technically in our premise, within our premises. And there was also another misunderstanding with, a person moving in and a person moving out. Sparing you to the details, she reacted very childishly. She kind of, yelled at us via email. She threatened to throw out all of the furniture that was not hers, but that was stored in the garage outside. And she also kind of slapped an unnecessary bill on us, all of which was super unfair. And, you know, this tends to happen when you deal with landlords directly, when there's no management in between, especially, you know, landlords from, I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say this, landlords that kind of are in wealthy neighborhoods. And, you know, they tend to be a little picky. They tend to be a little crazy. And they don't even live in the area. So it's hard for them to understand what's happening. So they kind of burst. There's an outburst. And it would make things so much more easier and calmer if they were in the same place. And then, you know, you were able to have a direct chat with them. But that was not the case. And, you know, it was a difficult time because I didn't know how to handle it. And, you know, I was the main point of contact. But eventually it tapered down. I still had to pay the unreasonably large bill that was slapped onto me. But, you know, I've let bygones be bygones and, you know, it's fine. Like, I'm not going to think about the money that I paid. But it was definitely a weird situation and, you know, unfair situation. And so I learned that it's really important to be super communicative with the landlord. They expect very clear communication. They want, you know, to know even if something small is moved out or something little bit is different, every little detail they expect to be communicated. And like I said, it's ideal if you have a management in between you and the landlord. I would definitely recommend that students kind of get that deal over directly dealing with the landlord, which can be super, it can be super unfair because landlords tend to be a little predatory. You know, so it's always ideal to have a management if you're dealing directly with the landlord, setting expectations, communicating every small change, every small request. I would see that as beneficial just to you in the future. And that's what I did in my second year staying in that house. And, you know, after I decided to move out, after I was done with grad school, it was a smoother process. And, you know, I was extremely polite, very friendly to her.
in all channels of communication. And that's the tricky bit. You have to be extremely polite, even if you're trying to convey a firm point. And I just walked out without having to pay much next, you know, in the end of the lease. I think a few dollars for a small damage or a cleaning fee. That's about it. And it was good. We ended things on good terms. And I think, you know, I was able to build that resilience and deal with a uncomfortable situation really well. But you know, I would definitely recommend staying in an apartment or living in a house where you know that you're dealing with the management and not the landlord.
Okay, so as usual, I'm going to help you guys and summarize it because I'm the best. I'm not sure. But okay, so thank you so much, Dikshan. I'm really sorry that you went through that really stressful time. But I believe that we pass through things so that we learn and we become better. And so you said, you know, learn to communicate really well with your landlord person. Learn to set expectations, and if you can, deal with a management company. So, yeah, definitely. And then I'm going to move away from accommodation because I feel like I asked 10 questions about accommodation. So now I want to talk more about like classes, assignments, problem sets, seminars. Could you tell us what a day in your life in grad school was like and what part of this entire journey you wish somebody had sat you down and warned you about? Or is there any advice you have with regards to even grades? Like, tell us something about the journey.
Sure. I, you know, to start off with, I wish I knew how hectic grad school was. I had no idea. And this is just speaking for me. I'm sure other people are more prepared, but I had no idea it was going to be this stressful. And I was definitely hit by a bus when I started classes because the reading lists are so long. I'm sure, you're nodding. You know how long they are. So I was, and this is just not for one class. This is for four classes. And I definitely was, at the end of my first week, I needed a breather. I needed to sleep. I needed to wake up and I needed to tell myself that this is going to be your life for 2 years. And on top of that, I really wanted a job. I wanted a job to, you know, to also support critical research that professors were doing, to learn on the job, but to also pay my bills, right? And that's the thing about being a grad student. You're handling your personal life. You are working. You are trying to stay sane, you're trying to keep up with your readings, and I'm sure everyone wants good grades. But here's the thing with grades, and this is something that another one of my friends kind of gave me advice on. She told me that don't worry too much about grades in grad school. You know, you've done the part of getting good grades in high school, getting into a good undergrad, getting the work experience. Now's the time to focus on learning. And she told me that grades really, as long as you're doing well and you're understanding the concept, it doesn't matter because no employer is going to be like, show me your grades. I want to see a 4.0. I want to see, you know, all straight A's. No one's going to ask you that. What they're going to ask you is that, do you have knowledge on this subject? Do you have the skills? Do you have the personal skills? Do you know how to talk? And that's what grad school is about. It's about developing holistically. And grades, I'm not saying grades don't matter. I'm not saying go flunk all of your of your subjects, but I'm saying focus on the bigger picture. If you're taking a class on data science, focus on getting really good with R. Focus on understanding how to apply this, you know, in when you're going to be working with an organization. If you're taking a policy class, understand how to critically analyze policy process. And that's what I tried to focus on. And sure, I mean, if you are passionate and if you really are committed, grades will automatically come, you know. So I think it's important to know the focus is not on grades. The focus is on learning. And you will get good grades if you focus on learning. What a typical day looked like for me. So I believe it or not, this was not my personality before grad school, but I would wake up at like 6-7 o'clock and go straight to the gym. I would go straight to the gym because I knew that pump after a workout, that feeling after a workout was what got me through the day. And it kept me active, you know, because when you're in grad school, there are going to be late nights. You're going to be always, you know, surviving on caffeine. You're going to be eating
all sorts of unhealthy food to keep up because, you know, and there's going to be a lot of work. And I think having that balance of that 1 hour in the morning or night or where, whenever, doing something that gives you the release, whether it's running, going for a run, lifting, whether it's, you know, reading a book, it's really important to get that space. I would start with that space and then kind of be ready to tackle the day. And it involved, of, you know, I would take one class a day. I wouldn't try to push myself to, you know, two classes. I think that was too much. And then I would spend some time in the university, be it the library or the lounge, where I would finish my assignments, finish up my reading. And here's the thing. I'm not really good with sitting. I love meeting people. I love chatting. I love debating. And that's what I would do when I'm in the lounge with all my friends. But when I really want to get down to business, when I want to read and study, I'm always at the library. I need to be in a place where I don't interact with anyone. I don't have anyone around me so I can really focus and get the work done. So that's what it really looked for me. And, you know, when I did get the free time, I would always be in the student lounge grabbing a free pizza or you know, catching up with friends. So, and that's the best part about grad school, where you just get to hang, go and grab drinks during happy hour with your friends. And it was amazing.
I definitely agree with you, especially about starting your day, right? Like you going to the gym, especially because in some schools, you know, you are forced to pay for the gym anyway. So the way I see it, it's like use everything you can use that you pay for. So that and reading is something that have also been very helpful. And I love the idea that you gave about how you took one class per day, because, you know, sometimes you can really get a lot. And the reading list, I have friends who have just started grad school and every one of them is talking about the reading list. So it can really get overwhelming. And just giving yourself that time to kind of pace things is very important. And then I also really actually love the fact that you knew yourself enough to know that, hey, when I want to get work done, I have to go to the library. I think that's very important. Like, I think it's important to kind of leave with your community and try with your community. But it's also important to know when you need to kind of go back and do you. Now, about the reading list, I myself know that there were some times when it was just impossible to catch up with everything. In your experience, what was the most efficient way to kind of get prepared for your classes?
Yeah, glad you brought that up. So in the first semester, I remember we had this class called Policy Process. We had a ton of reading. Sometimes it would be about 10 papers before the class, and we had, you know, only a few days to do the reading. And it's hard to kind of do it through the week because you have other classes and you have other reading material for the other classes. So a bunch of my friends, we started like a small study group, and it was, I think it was four of us who would split the reading, and we would do the reading. We had a shared document and we would summarize the reading. So all of us had access to it. So every week we would, each one of us would summarize our reading. And in the morning before class, 1 hour before class, we would meet and we would just like exchange key takeaways from each reading. And we were prepared. We knew exactly what, we might not have known every single detail about the paper, but we had a summary of what was going on. So if questions were asked or if you know, someone was discussing the paper that we had not read, we'd at least know what was being discussed. And in that way, you kind of catch up with all the reading. Sure, it doesn't always work. There were times where, you know, I was the only one who didn't do the reading and everyone else did, but then it's a collective effort. So you would rather know 6 out of 10 papers than none at all. Right. And it was a very understanding community, the four of us. We would not be too hard and fast about everyone has to read the papers and everyone has to summarize it correctly. It worked. Some days it didn't, but it's okay. It was a solution that kind of carried us along. And even till today, I remember like some of the papers that we discussed in class, it still stays with me because that's how rich a discussion it was.
Okay, so definitely 100% advice. If you have a group of trusted friends, get together, see how you can divide the reading materials and summarize it to each other. Thanks for sharing that, Diksha. So now, moving to my next grad school question as well. It's been so exciting getting to understand how you kind of managed to navigate through the whole grad school process, especially like from your community back in India to come into the United States and also finding your community here. And so it makes me really curious. Do you think that you have changed from the person that you were before you came to grad school and the person that you are now, especially with regards to the work you're able to do? Because I know that part of coming to grad school was because you were trying to get the technical expertise to help you become better at the job that you do. And so I was curious about how you have changed since you came to grad school, and are there examples you're willing to share?
Like I mentioned before, it's so hard to think about 2019. It feels like ages ago. And quite honestly, things have changed and I have changed too. There's been a lot of growth. There's been a lot of development. There's been a lot of perspective change. You know, I would say I have expanded the way I see things, I perceive things. And that's also very important to me. I feel like change can sometimes have a negative connotation, as in when I was in India, I was different and now I'm different. And, you know, it's not true in the sense that, you know, I've now become different because I've left India. And that's really not the point that I'm trying to drive home. It's just, it's a different place and you become a different person. You know, if I went back to India today and I looked at myself back, you know, in DC, I would be a different person. So I definitely would say that, you know, it's been a long journey and I've met a lot of different people, a lot of different ethnicities, a lot of different perspectives. And it really has informed how I look at things. And I really like the fact that I work in an institution that has so many different nationalities. Every day you meet different kinds of people and you understand little things like, you know, what they eat for lunch and you know, what they do, what festival they're celebrating today. And I think that's the celebration of different perspectives, different cultures is what I really appreciate being in DC. And it's definitely refreshing. It's taught me a lot. It's taught me to be very inclusive, to dismantle my internal biases. It's a process that I even continue to do today. And I think these changes are good. It's good growth. It's positive growth. And even when I go back home, I see things in a different light and it makes me feel good about it. And so in that way, I would say that it's a constantly evolving sort of a journey where it doesn't matter that I'm here. It doesn't matter that I go back home one day or go to another country one day. You just learn a lot. And I guess the key is keeping your eyes and ears peeled in order to absorb that change in environment around you.
Okay. Thank you for sharing those points. I definitely agree that coming to DC has been one of the most eye-opening experiences for me. And I also believe that life is a journey. So I think that we are all always moving towards something, or, you know, it just never ends. Like, you're always changing, you're always evolving. So definitely, I don't think change is a negative thing either. And just an aside, yesterday I found a yearbook from undergrad, like my final year yearbook from undergrad. And I was crying like an idiot because it's like, I have changed so much, but I'm still the same person. And I don't know, I know it sounds weird, but it's just like reading those things and seeing the person I am now. It was as if like I kind of could see into the future to know, okay, like when they asked about what my hobbies were or what makes me happy, the answers I gave kind of resonate with who I am now, but not really. And so I was just like, it was an overwhelming experience. So I definitely understand what you mean by change and how change is not a bad thing. Okay. And something else I'm really curious about is I have seen you travel everywhere. Thanks for not inviting me. She even told me that she was going. Where did you say you were going to that day? I've forgotten. I can't remember. And I'm like, whoa, thanks for inviting me. So my question to you, since you travel a lot, is like, no, but for real though, I know that traveling is something that can be very relaxing for students or just even for young professionals moving to new places. But then having a budget to travel is a reason why a lot of people don't travel. And so in your experience being a grad student who loved to travel, what were your three top destinations in the US? And If you don't mind, do you mind sharing like your budget with us?
By the way, that place that I went to was Nashville. And
I'm rolling my eyes, but you guys can't see me.
I'm still not inviting her. I'm kidding. We'll go for a trip next time. Well, travel, yes, it was definitely something on my to-do list when I came to the US. The US is such a large country. There are so many different landscapes. The West, I've never seen the West. I've not even gone to the West Coast. You too. And I really want to, and there's so much to do in the US. I love hiking. I know you do too. We've gone on hikes together.
I had the decency to invite her.
We'll get to that soon. But we've gone on hikes soon, and you know, I've been to a few places around DC for hikes and treks, which I will share soon. And it's definitely been on my bucket list to kind of go to all of the cities in the US and see a lot of the national parks. Like, definitely the national parks, that's on my list. And it's definitely been easier to do that now that I'm a working professional as opposed to being a grad student. So let me get into it. During my grad school years, I definitely had a budget that I stuck to. And this can be different for different people. But for me, I would do trips under $200. And this kind of included, you know, travel and like accommodation. I really stayed with friends, so that was really nothing. And, you know, going out and eating. We would sometimes make meals at home and then, you know, probably eat just one meal outside. But that's how we kind of planned it. And I know this might be different for different people. For me, it was about $200, maybe $250. It can be different for you. And but I'm going to give you some destinations that are workable. One being New York. That's definitely one of the destinations that every grad school on the East Coast, you know, is close to and accessible. So you can go to New York from DC via train or bus, or if you have a friend, you can even drive. It's not that far. I believe train is about 3.5 to 4 hours. The same for bus, and if you're driving, I think it would be about 5 hours. So I took the bus to New York, and you know, if you use Flixbus, which is the most convenient, it's about $30. You can get a really good deal for $30, maximum $40 one way. And I stayed with a friend in New York, and I used the subway to get everywhere. Who's going to use cabs in New York, right? And I walked most of, you know, if it's not too cold, most of the places are walkable as well from a certain, you know, point. And even the experiences, you don't really have to, you know, shell a lot of money out for many of the experiences in New York. So I would definitely say New York is one of the budget-friendly places for grad students to go to. Others included Boston. Boston is also, you know, pretty close depending on where you go to grad school. From DC, it's about 8 hours, but I took the overnight train. And overnight trains, here's the tip, it's cheaper to go via the Amtrak. And you kind of have to sleep through the night. You probably won't get sleep because there's always announcements, but it works. And Boston's really nice. It's very pretty. And then you also have Cambridge. And Cambridge is really, really cute. It's a very cute town. So I would say Boston and New York are, you know, quite obvious destinations. But other than that, I would say if you're living in DC, Shenandoah is a beautiful place. If you like trekking and hiking, it's literally free. Like, you don't have to, you know, pay too much for this. Maybe a ticket to enter the national park. And you know, if you have a friend that can drive, then you're sorted. And I would say smaller neighborhoods in the DMV area, like Old Town Alexandria, is a really nice place to go to. Baltimore, I haven't been, but I hear that, you know, a day visit is nice, and they have like a brewery, they have things to do around the area. So that can be a really nice place to go to as well.
Okay, so now that Diksha has shared all the amazing places she visited, I'm going to put some icing on the cake and tell you guys some more places you can go. that I didn't invite her to either. But I really, really love that you shared about New York, because New York is somewhere that I really love. I think I've been there too many times. I think when next the Welcome to New York sign sees me, it's going to be like, girl, you need to leave. But I also really love Delaware, and I think you should go. Okay. Delaware, New Jersey, I think they are closer than New York. Yes, and the beaches in Delaware are so fine. Like, they are really beautiful. But summer, definitely. Like, not a winter journey.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think I did go to a beach in Maryland, not Delaware. That's also really nice. And I did want to say, so I have a lot of family and friends that live in New Jersey. One of my really good friends from grad school lives there as well. And during the pandemic, over the summer break, she was so sweet. She invited me over to her place. And, you know, her family's from the same part of India as my mother. So there was like an understanding in terms of language and food. So I was really happy to go and stay with her for a week. It's in New Jersey. And you're right, actually, it's closer and it's easier to go to. And yeah, I had a blast. And there was this other time where I went and stayed with a family friend. And it's, you know, honestly, it's very comfortable going and staying with your family and friends in suburbs, because it's good food. It's, you know, a great life, and it's very comfortable. There's lots of fun things to do in like suburbia, you know. So that's also a very nice experience. You go to like big cities, that's nice. But then just kicking back and enjoying with family and friends is also really nice.
Okay, so definitely gone are the days when you would say, I don't have a car, is an excuse why you can't explore. Because Diksha just shared with us that you can use the Flixbus to New York or to take the Amtrak to Baltimore. I took the Amtrak to North Carolina.
Oh, no, the Amtrak to Boston. I've never been to Baltimore.
I don't know why I said Baltimore. Okay, now I want to switch a little bit to the emotional part of going to grad school, especially in terms of mental health. I know that you kind of tried to develop a lot of communities, and I know that they were definitely helpful, because every day wasn't Gucci. There were days when you couldn't do the readings because you didn't feel up to it, or because there were a lot of things going on around you that you just couldn't settle your mind to study. And so what was that experience like for you? Did you ever have any emotional or mental breakdown? What support could you find to help you get through phases like that?
Yes, this is definitely a very important question, because prioritizing, nurturing, and building your mental health is an important part of being in grad school, because it's so easy to kind of fall into this trap where you're lonely, where you're experiencing imposter syndrome. That's a, you know, a buzzword that's used a lot in grad school, and it's really easy to kind of, you know, have these breakdowns but not share it with anyone, internalize it, and then it manifests in different forms that are not very good for your productivity or even to have a good experience in grad school. Which is why I'm really glad that I at one point during my second year I prioritized on my mental health. I went to a therapist. I had the best journey. It was definitely difficult, but I came out of it stronger. And when I look back at grad school, I understand that, you know, that was one of the most important things that I had to deal with, unpack, fix, and then kind of move forward. And I'm happy I did that. For me, mental health was also a part of grad school. And it all started when, you know, the pandemic hit. Things were getting really crazy. There was a lot of isolation. There was a lot of worry about my family and friends back home. And then we went into summer break. So, you know, it didn't really hit me that hard, because I was just doing a few internships and, you know, most of my time was just spent having a good time in DC. But when the fall semester started, my second year, things started, you know, kind of spiraling out of my control. I remember I wasn't able to concentrate as well as I could in person. I wasn't able to concentrate on online classes. I just found the whole concept, you know, very strange. I felt like, you know, the pandemic robbed me of my experience from grad school, as did so many people. And the course load was the same. You know, we had the pandemic. We had online classes. Things were getting really, you know, difficult for students, but this course load was the same. That didn't change, even though the professors were really nice about it. They did give us you know, flexible deadlines. But at some point, it got to me because I knew I wasn't performing at my best. But I did not know how to forgive myself for it. I did not know how to remind myself that this is a hard time and this is not a natural phase in anyone's life, actually. I didn't know how to do that. And I remember actually having a breakdown. I had to email my professor, drop out of class in between. And I was trying to renew my passport, which was being, you know, the whole process was becoming really difficult. And I was just struggling with an internship that I was currently engaged with. And I didn't know how to deal with it because I didn't have the ability to forgive myself, be kind to myself. And that was when I started therapy. And I was so happy that Georgetown made it free for all their students, encouraged students to enroll because it was difficult times. And I think that was the best decision I made. And so it's really important to prioritize mental health. Go to see a counselor or a therapist. They will help you manage your life and manage how you see things better. While you, sure, you know, you're it's like muscle memory. You wake up, you get ready for the day. You know that you have to do reading. You know that you have to write. You know that you have to finish assignments. But sometimes it's so important to stop, take a break, and evaluate the bigger picture. And to be kind to yourself and to tell yourself that it's okay. You know, in nature, there are seasons that, you know, come and go where you have the winter, it's not so great. You have the summer, it's great. And you are part of nature. And you do deserve breaks. You deserve that time to recuperate, to take a pause, to breathe, so that you can perform better when you go back. And I think I would definitely share one tip for listeners is prioritize that more than anything. Only then you can, you know, give your best to grad school and come out successful.
One thing I really love about your responses is how vulnerable you are and how you're not afraid to kind of reach into the experiences that you yourself have faced. And definitely, I think, because we were like, our programs kind of align in the sense that even though we were not, I think we might have taken one class together, but it wasn't like the same. We didn't take all the courses together, but the experiences were quite similar. I do remember that the pandemic was also a time when I think that I found myself the most, because it was a time that forced me to sit still. And I think prior to then, I had not really sat still. It was like, you know, like you said, go to the gym in the morning, go to classes, work on problem sets till 11 p.m. and you wake up the next day and it's the same thing. And that was the first time that I had to also just like pause, because there was nothing else to do but just sit down. And for people like us that kind of lived in a townhouse with other people, it was sit down in your room. So it felt very suffocating. And I think one thing I also want to just add to what you've said to the dear listener is that I believe that the journey towards self-discovery will try to drown you. But if you keep at it, I think you will discover something about yourself that you've never found. And I think that's what happened to me during that phase where we kind of had to pause. I think that I took the words, and I was sharing this with you before we started recording, like, I don't really think I had the best relationship with my therapist. Not because, like, they were not great people, but I feel like sometimes people are not our people. And I just didn't think that she was my therapist. But she said something to me that really helped me in that phase. And it was to always ask yourself, why? Why do I feel depressed? Why do I feel anxious? And it helps you kind of walk back. And so it helped me really unpack a lot of things. And a lot of the things I unpacked were very ugly. They were things I had locked away for so long. And so just being in that place where I had to face them, like face to face, me and them in my room, it was really a lot. Like there were days where, I'm sharing this because I think that sometimes when you look at people's profiles from the outside, it always seems very clean. Like, oh, this person did this and then they did this and then they did that. But there were times when I also had to pause and I had to cry a lot and I had to think a lot. But it came at the end of the day with clarity, with understanding like, okay, yeah, this is who I am. This is what I want. This is why this particular phase has made me feel like that. And this is who I want to become. So thank you for being vulnerable with us and for sharing and for pulling that out from, you know, your pandemic archives. I really appreciate that. So I have three more questions because I know I have taken an hour of your time. So now, taking everything that you know, all of your experiences, and I'm talking like the academic ones, the ones that involved the people, the ones that involved even just sitting on your own and discovering yourself. What hopes do you have for the future? This entire experience that you've managed to gather, how have they prepared you for it?
Well, that's definitely a tough one. And I truly believe that, you know, you understand life retrospectively. You take chances when you go forward, but you really, you know, kind of click the pieces together when you think about it retrospectively. And to be very candid, I don't know where I'm going. I'd be lying if I tell you like this, you know, five-step process of where I'm going. But I don't. I know what I'm passionate about. I know what I'm doing right now. I know what it's going to lead me to. I know that I'm talking to the right people. I am opening myself to experiences, but I don't know where that will lead me. I want to trust the process. And I say this both professionally, personally, you know, in all spheres. I think what the experience in grad school has prepared me for is resilience. It's prepared me to take anything that comes my way. And, you know, to either make the best of it or to just deal with situations and, you know, accept that it's going to be this way. I've understood what my strengths and weaknesses are. And, you know, admitting that, you know, this is not my area or this is not my forte is something that comes with a lot of relief when you do. Because oftentimes it's easy in grad school to pressure yourself to be good at something. Whether it's a skill, whether it's an area of work, you know, because everyone's doing it. And I've understood, you know, especially that the process of finishing grad school and getting into the job market and working as a professional, it's okay. You're not good at some things, fine. Delegate it to someone. Maybe form a team where someone else is good at it. So maybe you can draw from their strengths and they will draw from yours. And I think admitting that is okay. Because admitting it allows you to also think about what you're good at and explore that area and develop it much more. So I would say definitely, you know, understanding my strengths and weaknesses, building resilience. And also, you know, I keep saying this word again and again, but it's so important, perspective. When you keep expanding your perspective, expanding the ability to be empathetic, it really serves you well in your profession. It you know, some people call it soft skills. I remember one of my professors called it power skills. And these are really little things that get you forward, that make you stand out. And I think I have also made equal amount of time to invest and to hone these power skills. And so these are the things that really I've walked away with from grad school, and that, you know, I can say for certainty that's helped me in the profession as well.
So something I really love about the responses you gave were that they lean more on the intangible side and things that it might be very difficult for people on the outside to see, like, oh yeah, this, like, without communicating with you, it might be difficult to just see it on your profile. And I really love the idea of resilience, because you really need that in life. I feel that nothing really prepares you for how resilient you have to be for a lot of things in life. I also love the idea of perspective, just being open, allowing your mind to really just expand and know that there's so much going on in the entire world. Like, it's a whole world out there. But then especially understanding your strengths and your weaknesses. And I would love to really focus a little bit on this point, because I also think that just in general, we live in a world where it's like everybody's doing something. And especially depending on the kind of program you go into, it seems like everybody is doing the same kind of thing. And so if you're unable to kind of discover who you are or find your own niche, it's so easy to get sucked into all of that. And if you suck at it, you just feel like you're failing, and that becomes something to spiral about. So definitely, I really agree. And I think that as people go into this grad school process, you know, as much as you try to get the things that are what my computer science people will call the hardware that you can see, but the soft skills or the power skills, like you and your professor have talked about, are also very important. So I would really love to talk about love. I know that I met your partner and they are so wonderful. But then I know that you kind of had a time where you were both in the same location. He had to travel, and then it kind of had to move from you guys being in the same location and navigating your relationship to him traveling and it being kind of long distance. So how have you been able to, first of all, how did you cope with having a relationship while in grad school? Because I'm sure that was very crazy. And when he moved, like, how did that feel for you? And how have you guys managed to keep in touch, especially given the difference in time zones?
It's my favorite question too, Abele. Well, let me talk about, you know, the question about how we managed grad school together. So a little bit of a backstory is that my partner and I, we decided to apply to grad school at the same time, unintentionally, because, you know, when I met him, he was telling me about how he's preparing to apply. And I was like, hey, even I am. And I think it started from there. And not when we came to DC, not during the pandemic, but we supported each other during the application process. We helped each other. We reviewed each other's, statement of purposes. And he's in a very different field from me. I'm in public policy. He's in law. And we were able to give perspectives to each other, you know, from outside our industry. It was great. And, you know, we applied, we got into the same school, Georgetown, and I decided to go there and so did he. And, you know, this was a decision that we ensured we didn't make because of each other. We ensured we made this because, you know, it was a good school. We knew that it would give us good opportunities and it just aligned. It almost felt like, you know, there was a higher power there. And so when we finally sent in our acceptances, we looked at each other and we were like, wow, we're doing this. We're going together. But I remember, you know, we had this chat and we were speaking about how, you know, grad school would be a unique experience to both of us. And because it was both of our first time studying abroad and we wanted to make the most of it. And, you know, like I've mentioned throughout the podcast, we wanted to have good experiences, good journeys and really, you know, individual experiences as well. So we decided that we'd create a system where, you know, he lived separately near campus, near his campus, and I lived in near mine, but we would meet often. We would kind of ensure that, you know, during the weekends we spent time together, we introduced our friends to one another. He knew everyone that, you know, was in my class, that he obviously knew everyone that I was staying with. And it created a beautiful community. I knew his friends. He knew mine. I would go to his, grad events. He would come from mine. So we kind of had double the fun, I want to say. But, you know, like I say, it's not only peaks, it's also valleys. And we were there for each other during difficult times, during internship rejections, during not being able to get into certain classes, in applying for jobs, you know, getting job rejections. We were there for each other. And I think, and that's the unique part of our journey. We had each other and we're also best friends. So we were able to support one another. And it just felt better knowing that at the end of the day, I have my best friend, my partner next to me. It's okay. It's okay. I didn't get that one internship or that one job. So I think that definitely made a difference. And we had been together before grad school, so it made it easier to kind of communicate, to know what he's doing, what I'm doing, to set expectations, and also to kind of give ourselves and each other space to do what we wanted to do. So, you know, if he was with his friends, where he had classes, he had to prepare for an exam, I would understand. It's okay because I had my friends and I had, you know, my roommates with me. So I think it was a good balance. We really worked hard to strike that balance. Then came COVID and we had to kind of live together and he had to move in with me, which is great. And I think that was a beautiful experience and that was a different phase of our relationship because we hadn't lived together like that. And, you know, like you mentioned, you had to sit still in your room, among other rooms where your roommates were. It was a different journey. It presented its challenges. We had to overcome a lot of those challenges, living together, figuring out our schedules. You know, he was working, I was studying still. And safe to say that we tided through those times and it only brought us closer together and stronger. And then, like you mentioned, he had to leave. He traveled to a different country where he's currently working. And
that's a different phase. You know, I think we've seen so many different phases in the last few years. I would say that having a very strong base, you know, of being in our home country, living through a pandemic, being together during grad school, because when you both go to grad school, you understand the difficulties, you understand the expectations, you understand the pressures that come with it. So there's a lot of empathy and understanding, and that helped. And then, you know, living together during the pandemic, it created a very good foundation for us to jump into this long distance relationship phase. Communication is key. We try to always make time to update each other of our day, even if it's a 5-minute call. You know, there's also time zone differences. So he's probably getting ready to, you know, go to sleep when I'm wrapping up work. And so we always make sure, even if it's 5 minutes, to call and tell each other how our day went and say I love you before going to sleep is so important and so crucial to us. And that time is what we hold, and that's what carries us through this long distance journey as well. And like I said, you know, he's my best friend, and my best friend's gonna support me with my career interests, with my personal interests, and so am I. And you'd never let your best friend down. So I think that's what really keeps us going.
First of all, I want to confirm that Diksha and her boo very cute. And I really, really love that you shed light on the need to kind of go through the grad school journey with someone who is really empathetic and someone who really understands. And I think a good portion of that understanding is where you talked about communication, being able to communicate with each other so you're able to really know, where you're really able to understand what's happening in each other's lives and to be able to also manage your expectations based on the information that you have. And I really appreciate you sharing how you've gone through these different phases with him. And you guys know I'm rooting for you. If you have a wedding in Nashville and you don't invite me.
I'm not going to have a wedding in Nashville.
Okay, just checking. But that was really, really, that was really, really great. Because I know that sometimes the grad school experience puts strains on relationships. It's something that I have seen happen so many times. And I try to tell people, even just with friendships, I think when you come to grad school, sometimes, like your friends back home, sometimes they think that you are just pretending to be busy, but you're literally struggling for your life. So I'm really glad that you have somebody with whom, you know, both of you are each other's best friends and you motivate each other. I asked Diksha to send me her bio 10 weeks ago, and she wouldn't send it to me until she sent it to her best friend. So I really love the support. Like, it's in everything. For real, I know I tease you a lot, but really, it's very sweet. I give you 30 minutes where I don't tease you. Okay. And then my final question for you is one that I always love to ask my guests, because I think that the people who come on this podcast are very different and they share a lot of very different advice from different facets of life. And so my question to you is, what advice do you have for someone listening? It doesn't have to be something serious. It might be go out every day to scream outside your house. But what would your parting words be for the listener?
I think summarizing my experiences, my journey in grad school and meeting so many different people, I would say be open to new experiences. You might not know it yet, but you're capable of great things. And something that I follow in principle when I meet people, or when I, you know, it just doesn't have to be people, it can be even new experiences, is focus on the commonalities, focus on the similarities. Because if I were to focus on how different we are, I'm never going to be your friend. I wouldn't be on this podcast. But if I continuously and intentionally focus on the similarities and commonalities, that's how you foster so many new friendships and good relationships. And I think in life, it's just a principle. Focus on the commonalities in every situation and every place that you're in. You might not know what good things might come out of it.
Okay, guys, so remember to focus on the commonalities wherever you are, whatever it might be, whether it regards to human relationships or different places and different experiences. Okay, Diksha, so we've had this conversation for 1 hour and I know exactly where to find you. But for people who want to kind of connect with you, people who have really enjoyed this conversation, and do you mind sharing where they can find you?
happy to connect with anyone via my LinkedIn. It's Diksha Ramesh. I'm sure you can, you know, make a link in your podcast as well, or when you put it out on Instagram. Happy to hear your stories, hear what you thought about. If you disagreed with me, I'd love to hear your perspective as well. And I'd just like to even hear if you have any questions about life. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Abeli.
Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, listeners, for getting to this point, because we know that our episodes are not the shortest episodes in the world, but we want to make sure we give you all the tea and squeeze out all the juice that we can from each guest. If you enjoyed this episode, please check out our other episodes or follow us on social media at My Grad School Board. Don't forget, we share information in different formats to reach people where they are. So you can take a look at our newsletter, you can listen to the podcast episodes, or you can go on the social media pages where the information is more synthesized. Till we meet next time, it's been fun hanging with you. I'm your grad school buddy, and thank you for listening.